Welcome, everyone. We're really happy to have Rabbi Jaffe here this week. Now, for the shiur, I'm going to turn it over to him like very soon. But for the shiur, we just ask that you remain muted and you put any questions that you have in the chat, and we'll go through those near the end. Turn it over to you, Rabbi Jaffe.
Okay. Thank you, Orly, for that wonderful introduction. Welcome, everyone. Good evening. My name is Yaakov Jaffe. I serve as the rabbi of the Maimonides Congregation in Boston, Massachusetts. And I also am an administrator at the Maimonides School. It's nice to meet all of you. It's good to see some familiar names here in the Zoom. So nice to meet everyone. And if you ever visit Boston, you can feel free to give me a ring and I can say hello in person. I'm going to make one request, and that is it's okay for you to unmute yourself and ask a question. So my request is that if you have a question, to feel free to unmute and ask it, because Torah study is supposed to be interactive, and it increases the energy if we're more interactive. So if you feel comfortable, listening to the shiur with the button on mute, that's fine. But if you have a question to ask, please feel free to pipe in, because that way we can have an interactive example of Torah study. Okay, without any further ado, this week's Parsha is Parsha Shoftim. A lot of very interesting topics in Parsha Shoftim to talk about. But we're going to talk about a topic which is interesting, not just within the interpreting the Torah, but it's also interesting philosophically. And it's a question that America struggles with as well. And that's the question of what is the role of capital punishment in society? In this week's Parsha, we have capital punishment on a number of circumstances, capital punishment for murder, capital punishment for false witnesses, capital punishment for idolatry. And you can't read the Parsha. You can't see the Parsha discussing all these individuals who get capital punishment without asking yourself, why do we have capital punishment? That's the question that I'd like us to talk about today. Now, before we get to the Torah and the Parsha and what God has to say about capital punishment, let's start with an easier question, which is, has anyone ever given thought about what's the role of punishment in an American or a Canadian or an Israeli legal system? Let's forget about Judaism for a second. Why do governments give punishments to people who commit crimes? Why do people go to prison for 30 years, for lifetime in prison? Let's start by asking ourselves the question in a vacuum. And after we surface some possible explanations for capital punishment, then we'll take a look at the Parsha. So I'll open up the floor if anyone has any thoughts. I have a few of my own, but for the sake of participation, if anyone has any thoughts, please feel free to unmute yourself and share it with the group.
I suppose the theory is that if you punish somebody for doing something, it'll deter other people from doing the same thing. They'll say, oh, look, he passed a red light and they put him in prison for 10 days. I don't want to do that. Second reason would be, just to take a dangerous person off the streets, keep him in jail. And a third reason is societal revenge, although we don't like to think about that.
Okay, great. So we have three reasons, which I'll call deterrence, pragmatics, and vengeance. And in the chat, we also have mysterious Mr. iPad saying this gave the same three reasons. I think in political theory, these three reasons are the typical three. Let me explain them. And then if anybody has a fourth, they can add a fourth theory as well. The first theory behind punishment is pragmatic. It's pragmatic because a criminal might commit a crime again. So we have to put a criminal in jail, or we have to put a criminal to death, because we want to keep society safe. And if we want to achieve the pragmatic goal of keeping people safe, then sometimes we have to take a violent murderer, a violent criminal, somebody who's abusive, we have to take them off the streets. That's pragmatics. Second theory is deterrent. This is maybe the most complicated of the theories. The deterrent theory says the reason why I have to punish crime is that if I want to motivate future criminals not to commit crimes, I have to have a punishment. I don't really need to punish people after the crime. It doesn't really do me any good to punish a criminal after the fact. But because my goal is to discourage future criminals, I put criminals in jail. That's the second one, which is deterrent. And the third one is vengeance. If you commit a crime, you deserve to be punished. Measure for measure. Nakom yinakem, the Torah says in one place. If you killed, you deserve to be killed. If you punch somebody, you deserve to be punched. And punishment, the purpose of punishment is in order to serve the purpose of vengeance. Okay, so those are three reasons. And now I see in the chat we have a fourth reason. A fourth reason in the chat, which is to rehabilitate or reform a person. So that is a great explanation, potentially in maybe an American or a Canadian legal system, that somebody who goes to jail and they take courses and they learn discipline. That doesn't work for capital punishment, though, which is what we're going to focus on here, because obviously in capital punishment, the person is put to death and there's no reformation or rehabilitation. Before we go to the parsha, I'll just give a one last chance if anyone wants to add an additional thought about why we have capital punishment besides our first three: pragmatic, make sure we don't have future crime; deterrent, the whole goal is to scare people from committing crimes; or vengeance, as somebody put in the chat, you unleashed violence on the world, so we have to make things right, and the way we do that is by punishment. Chaim?
Yeah, do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. One of Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach is to put a system of court. And what's the reason you put system of court? And Tehillim says, if you will not do it, Ishut Achav Et Achiv Yuchalu. One will actually chew his brother because there is no system. We have to put a judicial system to control the people. Now, if you do so, but you don't give them the right tools, so all the system is not going to work.
Correct. So I think that's one of the theories that we have for capital punishment. This would work either with the deterrent theory or the pragmatic theory, that the purpose of capital punishment is not for revenge. Perhaps Judaism doesn't believe in revenge. We'll have to investigate that. The purpose is pragmatic, to make sure that there's safety. Okay. Thank you for the correction. Canada does not have capital punishment. One thing that I would add just about capital punishment versus life imprisonment is actually possible today. You can have a serial killer who you could put them in jail for life today for the rest of their lives. And, you know, you can have a concrete jail and you can arm prison guards with electric fences and with weapons. And you could put somebody in jail, you know, for the rest of their lives. Part of the struggle for a Jewish court is going to be that they didn't have concrete jails and they didn't have electric fences and they didn't have guns. And so the idea of being able to lock somebody up in jail for all their life was much less plausible in the time of the Torah. Okay, I'm going to now set up a screen share to the first aliyah of this week's parsha. And we're going to look at the Torah and tell us what theory the Torah has for capital punishment. So here comes the screen share. Isn't technology wonderful? I'm going to slowly scroll through the parsha. You can read it in English or in Hebrew. And if anything pops into your head that looks like it's sharing a theory of capital punishment, you can stop me or type something in the chat or unmute yourself and share what you have to say. Here we discuss somebody who is an idolater. It's one of the cases of capital punishment in Judaism. And we hear about this. The witnesses hear about it. The punishment is stoning.
That the person who sees it needs and reports it needs to do it. They can't just report it. They have to be actively involved in meting out the punishment.
Okay, very good. Excellent. So Debbie has pointed out, if you look here in Zion, I'm highlighting it in the Hebrew. And now I'm going to highlight it in the English. The hand of the witnesses has to be responsible for punishing the criminal. Why? If the purpose of capital punishment is pragmatic, to get the murderer off the streets, it doesn't really matter who is the one to give the punishment. If it's a deterrent to scare people in the future, again, it doesn't matter who does the punishment. But if the theory is vengeance, that's interesting. Maybe the witnesses, because they saw the crime, because they were there at the time of the crime, perhaps saying the witnesses must give the punishment shows that it's more of a theory related to vengeance. But look at the end of this pasuk. Uviarta hara mikirbecha. And you shall abolish evil from among you. What does that sound like?
That's pragmatic.
Yeah, it sounds to me like this is the pragmatic theory. Biarta, maybe you know that from Pesach. We do biur chametz. We get rid of the chametz. Biarta hara mikirbecha. You should get rid of the evil from your midst. Biarta hara sounds like it's pragmatic. There are people who are evil. There are people who are breaking the covenant of society. And pragmatically, we have to remove them in order to keep society as it should be. By the way, if you're looking for a project during laning this Shabbat, you could sit there and listen how many times you hear the phrase Uviarta hara mikirbecha or Uviarta hara miYisrael. We had it a few times last week. We have it a few times this week. We have it a few times next week. I used to work for the Chidon HaTanach, the National Bible Contest. This was a favorite question they always used to ask. By which does it say Uviarta hara mikirbecha? You hear it again and again. I think it's 10 times in the Torah. That sounds like it's pragmatic. We just want to remove evildoers, and the only way to do that in a society without access to good jails may be through capital punishment. So Ellen is asking an interesting question here that maybe I have mistranslated Uviar Tahara Mikirbecha. How do you translate that word ra? I translated ra as you will get rid of the evil doers from your midst. That's how Rashi translates it. Uviarta hara mikirbecha, get rid of evil doers. Ellen, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the way I understand Ellen's comment in the chat is, no, biarta hara doesn't mean evildoers. If it meant evildoers, it would say uviarta anshei hara mikirbecha. Ellen says, ra means evil as a sort of incohate, ephemeral, mystical concept, which might sound more like the vengeance theory. Viarta hara mikirbecha, get rid of the evil that's in your midst. Amazingly, this pasuk gave us a hint to all three, to the vengeance theory, and also a hint to the pragmatic theory, depending on how you translate the pasuk. Okay, there's one other comment in the chat. Give me a moment. Yeah. iPad asks the same question as Alan. Is the Rav the person or the action? Is it we want to get rid of a specific person, which is the pragmatic theory, or the action? We want to sort of undo the evil of the action. Now, if we continue just a few more psukim, the Torah gives us a different perspective. The Torah continues and says, if you don't know what if you don't know what the right rule is, you should appeal and go to Jerusalem. You should go there to the priests who are engaged in judgment and justice. This is an interesting idea, which is maybe a shiur for a different week, that it's interesting. Normally we think of the temple as being a place that's associated with sacrifice and animals and priests and, incense and things like that. This verse seems to say that the Beis HaMikdash has a role in interpersonal law, and there was a great court in Jerusalem. I have a shiur on YouTube about that topic. If you could Google it after we're done here. Okay, you go to the Kohen tells you what to do. You have to listen to the Kohen. Now let's look at the last two psukim of the Aliyah. V'ayish asher ya'aseh bizadon, an man or a woman who acts intentionally. L'vilti shmol ha'kohen ha'omed l'shar Hashem es Hashem elokecha o la'shofet. Somebody who doesn't listen to the Kohen, somebody who doesn't listen to the judge. Umeita ishahu, and there's our phrase again. Uvi'arta Rami Yisrael, sounds like pragmatic. Until we get to the last pasuk. V'chol ha'am yishmu v'yirau, and the entire people shall hear and fear. V'lo yizidunot, and not sin again. What does the last pasuk sound like? The whole nation shall listen and fear?
A deterrent.
Last pasuk sounds like a deterrent. You see, if our primary goal was that this person was a criminal and this person couldn't remain in our society, then we could punish this person behind closed doors. No one else really needs to know about it. It's between us and that person. When you say, b'chol ha'am yishmu v'yirau, that the entire nation should hear about this and be scared. And Rashi says, based on the Gemara, this means that you have to actually announce when somebody gets capital punishment for everyone to hear, and that they try to do it before one of the three holidays, before Aliyah Lerega, when all the Jews have descended on Jerusalem. That sounds like it's a deterrent. Our goal is lo yizidunot. We want everybody else to see this is the punishment for a criminal so that no one else will want to be a criminal. That's our primary focus. Our primary focus is not this person, this crime. Our primary focus is the next crime, making sure the next crime doesn't happen. So we've read one Aliyah the Parsha. And we have no idea what the answer is because the Torah gave us all three of our theoretical reasons for capital punishment. Perhaps all three are true. Perhaps there's truth to all three answers. And that's why the Torah gives us a little bit of all three. Okay. I'll stop the screen share for a moment, give everybody an opportunity to ask any questions if they do. And I want to show you after we pause for questions, I want to show you a Rashi, which I think Rashi is also torn by exactly this question. So we'll pause for questions. And if not, I'll show you the Rashi and we'll see how Rashi, I think, is torn by our very question. What is the theory of capital punishment? Okay, no questions. That's great. That means either everybody understands or I put everybody to sleep. Hopefully it means everybody understands. So we'll go take a look at this Rashi. I think this Rashi is amazing because the question that legal scholars struggle with today, Rashi struggled with, I think, years ago. Now, in Pasuk Hey, in the fifth verse, which should be in front of you on your screen, we describe capital punishment taking place. I'll read it in the Hebrew, and then I'll read it with the translation of Chabad.org. The Hebrew says, "V'tzeisa sa'ish ha'hu o'as ha'isha ha'hi," you should take out this man or woman, "asher asu ha'davar hara hazeh el she'arecha," that did this evil thing to she'arecha, "es ha'ish o'as ha'isha," the man or the woman, bring them to she'arecha, "uskaltam v'amanim v'mesu," and stone them and they should die. Capital punishment is described in this verse as taking place in she'arecha. Now, is there anybody here who speaks Hebrew who, before we look in the English, would like to translate the word she'arecha?
Your gates, which means in a public place.
Yeah. So she'arecha means your gates.
It's a marketplace.
Correct. So in the ancient world, the gate was the marketplace.
It's also where the judges met.
And we know from elsewhere in the Tanakh, that's where the judges met. When Boaz wants to meet the judges in Megillat Rut, he goes to the Sha'ar. I can't really understand the translation here of Chabad.org, which translates it as cities. We all know, I mean, the Hebrew word for cities is not She'arecha. The Hebrew word for cities is Erecha. Okay, I don't know why Chabad.org did it, but okay, fine. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi is trying to understand, when you say that the capital punishment is given at the gate, which gate are we talking about? Rashi has two views. One view is that it's the gate of the court. In Aramaic, litara beit dinach. Aramaic, the tuf in Aramaic, means the gate. Tuf becomes a shin in Aramaic. So litra is sha'ar beit dinach. That capital punishment is given at the court. And the other version that Rashi says is that it's not the court, it's sha'ar she'avadbo, that capital punishment is given in the city or the location where the crime was committed. So let's think about that. What is the underlying philosophical difference between the two versions of Rashi, whether capital punishment is given at the court or capital punishment is given at the scene of the crime?
If it's the scene of the crime, then it's deterrent for the rest of the community.
So, exactly. So if capital punishment is designed to keep people from becoming copycat criminals, we have to do it in the same place that the crime took place. I mean, imagine somebody violates Shabbat or idolatry or murder in, Haifa. Well, if they've done it in a public place, then it might encourage people to be copycats or to take Shabbat or idolatry or murder less seriously in Haifa. If we take the criminal and we bring them to Jerusalem to be tried and we punish them in Jerusalem, there's not a deterrent effect for the people of Haifa because they don't see the punishment being given out. If it's pragmatic, the punishment can be anywhere. If capital punishment is pragmatic, this person is an evildoer. We can't allow this person to do this crime again. Well, then the court can take care of his or her punishment wherever the court is, and it doesn't matter where the punishment is given. But if the issue is deterrence for other people to see and hear, or if the issue is vengeance, you want to go back to the scene of the crime, the place of the original breach where the community was broken through the crime. We want to go back to exactly that place and heal the breach, make things right by punishing the criminal. So these two opinions in Rashi may be actually debating this philosophical question: what is the nature of capital punishment? Okay. So I stopped the screen share. We had our initial theory. That was our first 15 minutes. Then we looked at the Parsha and Rashi, and we saw how the Parsha and Rashi may be struggling with exactly our question. I want to now move us to the next aspect of this, which is capital punishment a good thing or a bad thing? Is capital punishment a necessary evil that if we want to have a civil society before we can build concrete jails, we need to have it, but we're not happy that we have it? Or is capital punishment a good thing? Something that we're proud of, or something that we feel like is a good thing within our Jewish tradition?
Look how infrequently that happened.
Okay, so Chava knows the famous Gemara in Makos on Daf Zayin, in which the Gemara in Makos says that the rabbinical court, there were rabbinical courts who would give capital punishment once a year, once every 7 years, once every 50 years, once every 70 years. They gave capital punishment very infrequently. So Chava says, it shows you it's not a good thing, because why would the rabbinical court be giving it so infrequently if it was actually a good thing? So I want to push that a little bit. I want us to think about that. I want us to talk about that. If you really believe that the fabric of the universe is torn asunder when certain crimes take place, and capital punishment is the way that God ties the ripped fabric of the universe back together, then maybe it's not such a bad thing. I mean, if you really take the approach that Ellen suggested before, that bi'arta hara mikirbecha means that there's ra, there's this disembodied evil in your midst, and this is something that we have to get rid of, then it's maybe a good thing to get rid of that. And I want to go back to something that somebody mentioned earlier about the role of capital punishment in rehabilitation. The Gemara in Sanhedrin in the sixth chapter says that capital punishment achieves forgiveness for the perpetrator. As Jews, we believe that in Olam Haba is where we finally have the reward for all good deeds and the punishment for all bad deeds. And the way that a murderer or an idolater or a Shabbat desecrator merit a share in the world to come is through capital punishment. So therefore, maybe Judaism believes that capital punishment is a way to refine or improve society. And therefore, because it's a way to improve refine society, therefore it's a good thing. Of course, Chava's point stands that if it's... then why do they do it so infrequently? I don't know, but perhaps it's a good thing and not a bad thing. I'm going to screen share again, and I'm going to show you how on the page that we have a view that all of your shuls are going to take this Shabbat about whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. Screen sharing again. I'm going to hide Rashi. Here's the end of the first Aliyah. Somebody who commits a crime gets capital punishment, and they're going to die. End of the Aliyah. Does this surprise anyone?
I mean, it's surprising in the sense that we often don't like to end an aliyah on something on a bad note.
Correct. We never end aliyot on bad circumstances in the Torah. Rabban Nachmanides, in his commentary on Megillah, says that you're supposed to end every aliyah at a paragraph. Except if you follow along the laning with a chumash that has paragraphs, you'll know that we almost never end at paragraphs. because so many of the paragraphs end with negative things, and we don't end Aliyah with negative things. In fact, in Parshas Bereishis, there's like 10 paragraphs in Bereishis that all end with, and so-and-so died. And we don't end Aliyos in those paragraphs because we don't end Aliyos with people dying. So what's going on here? Why are we ending an Aliyah with the death of an idolater? So your shuls are all making this announcement in shul this Shabbos. When you end the first Aliyah in your shuls this Shabbat, you're announcing to the congregation, capital punishment is a good thing. It's a way to get repentance for the criminal. It's a way to heal society. And therefore, we're going to end the Aliyah with capital punishment to show that it's a good thing. By the way, you're not just going to do this week. You're going to do it next week too. Let me show you next week's Parsha. You'll notice the same thing. Give me a moment. First Aliyah of next week's Parsha ends the same way. The Ben Sora Umora, the rebellious son, he's stoned. Same thing. And the Aliyah. Lovely. The Ben Sora Umora was stoned. We're very happy. That's exactly what we wanted to see. So you
maybe the ending is not so-and-so was killed, but everybody heard it and paid attention.
So that may be, Ellen, give me a second. Let me first make the point and then I'll make your point. But just I want to make sure everyone understands. My point is, you may have never noticed this, but in your shul this Shabbat, when you end the Aliyah, you're making a proud announcement that we endorse capital punishment in Judaism. Ellen is trying to defend all of your shuls and say that your shuls are not defending capital punishment. The Aliyah really doesn't end with the death. It ends with everybody hearing about the death. So it's not exactly ending with death. Okay, that's a justification for everybody's shul. But I want to tell you all something that probably you didn't know, which I think is amazing. And if you didn't hear anything else in this year, it's what I'm about to tell you. When I introduced myself at the onset, I noted that I serve as the rabbi of the Maimonides congregation in Brookline, Massachusetts. And our congregation was founded by Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, the Rav Zatzal, in the summer of 1963. We do a number of unusual things in our congregation. And the unusual things that we do because Rabbi Soloveitchik asked them to do it. And he told our congregation to not end the Aliyah as it appears in the screen in front of you this Shabbat. I assume because he felt capital punishment was a necessary evil and not a good thing. So you're all invited to visit my shul this Shabbat. If you visit my shul, we end the Aliyah here. Three verses earlier. You should listen to the rabbinical court whatever they instruct you to do. We do that because in my synagogue, we believe that capital punishment is a necessary evil. Maybe the pragmatic reason that we just have to get this person off the streets because we just can't manage them. Or the deterrent reason, if we don't punish criminals, we'll have more crime. But it's a necessary evil. It's not something that we're proud of. It's not something that we are happy about. It's not something that we would end an Aliyah with. And therefore, in our shul, we don't end the Aliyah here. And if anybody is a member of their own shul's ritual committee, you can petition your own shul to change what you're doing too. But it's interesting how we don't even notice it. The decision about how to end the Aliyah is actually taking a profound stance about the role of capital punishment. Okay. I'll pause the screen share again, give opportunity now for people to ask questions. And if somebody wants to disagree with me, because generally people, want to defend the practices of their own shuls, please, I want to give everyone the opportunity to disagree with me if needed.
I think we can assume that the Rav wasn't innovating anything when he made that change. That must have been the minhag in Bris, because the Rav didn't change customs.
Correct. I'm not suggesting that the Rav invented this on his own. And the truth of the matter is that today there's a standard way to end the Aliyot, but the truth is that as recently as the year 1850, 170 years ago, there was much less standardization about where the Aliyot ended. So it's possible that this was not his own innovation, and this is an ancient practice of other ancient congregations. What I mean to say is that in the year 2021, I'm not aware of any other printing or major rabbinic authority who's advocating this besides Rabbi Soloveitchik. I'm attributing it to him. But Gershon, I think that is a valid point, that it's possible that this is a custom going back, you know, many, many more years to what was prevalent in some communities in Europe. Okay, so if no one else is disagreeing, that's always a good sign that people aren't disagreeing, because it means that, I guess, what I said makes sense. I want us to take a look at the end of the Parsha, because a lot of the same set of questions also applies at the end of the Parsha as well. As you may know, the last Aliyah of Parshat Shoftim describes the scenario of an unsolved murder. And in the case of the unsolved murder, a calf finds the back of its head broken. It's a very unusual ritual that we gather the rabbis, we take this calf, we break its head, the leaders of the community wash their hands over a wadi, the Kohanim come and say, forgive the Jewish people. Here too, we see two major opinions. The Rambam's understanding of this ritual of the calf is that it's entirely pragmatic. The Rambam says, if you have an unsolved mystery, a dead body, we don't know who committed the crime, we may not even know who the victim is, what do legal systems often do when they have unsolved mysteries? We don't know who the person is and we don't have any leads. So what usually happens? It's a cold case. You put it under the rug, it's a cold case, it ends up in a file cabinet somewhere. I actually read I think it was an op-ed somewhere just this week, in which there was a whole discussion about this in America, about to what extent in America are there cases that could be solved, and people just, they're not motivated to solve them. The Rambam says the reason why we have this ritual with the calf is to try to solve the murder.
To publicize it.
It's a huge tumult. First, you have to measure to at least two cities. You have to figure what is the closest city, what is the second to closest city. You have to take a huge tape measure of some sort and measure. Everyone's going to see this. Judges have to come from the Supreme Court in Jerusalem to do the judging. Then you're taking a cow to a valley somewhere. The cow is going to be making noise. You don't slaughter the cow, which is likely to be, it doesn't make a lot of noise. You have to take an axe and break the hard part of the cow's head, which is going to make noise. The Kohanim come, there's a whole ritual, and that plot of land can never be turned into farmland in the future. Rav says, why are you doing this ritual? Well, what's the purpose of this? The purpose of this, the Rambam says, is to be pragmatic. We want to solve the case. Maybe in this time, we don't know who the murderer is. It's not obvious who the murderer is, and the victim, we may not even know who the victim is. But we have to solve the case because we can't have a climate or a culture where murderers run free. So at the end of the parsha, the Rambam says, here we have a case. And just like the beginning of the parsha had capital punishment for pragmatic reasons, the end of the parsha also is pragmatic in tone. Others disagree. I'll screen share again. The penultimate pasuk of the parsha. As part of the ritual, the Kohanim say at the end, Kaper le'amcha Yisrael asher padisa Hashem, God atone for your people, Israel. V'altitein dam naki b'kerav amcha Yisrael, and do not let the guilt of innocent blood remain among your people, Israel. V'ni kaper lahem hadam, and the blood shall be atoned for them. What does that sound like? That doesn't sound pragmatic. That sounds like...
Sounds like vengeance, or maybe less, vengeance
is maybe not the right word, but the blood needs purity.
It sounds a lot like purity.
Yeah, more like purity. It's the same kind of theory as vengeance, but it's more purity maybe than vengeance. That there's this spilt blood in the society. The spilt blood has to be addressed. It has to be made right. Well, if you knew who the murderer was, you would do capital punishment, and the capital punishment would achieve the purpose of making things right and rebalancing whatever breach was created by the innocent blood. In this case, we don't know who the murderer was, so therefore we take a calf. And we take the life of the calf, and by taking the life of the calf, we use an animal's life in an effort to, atone the blood for them. To the point Chava made before, it's an interesting question. This theory of capital punishment is clearly present in the Torah. It's interesting that in the Gemara and Makos, you have rabbis saying, we don't do capital punishment, which seems to, deny this theory. This theory also appears in Parshat Maaseh, which we read a few weeks ago. V'la'aretz lo yuchupar, the land will not be atoned, l'adam asher shupach ba, for the blood that was spilt in it, ki im b'dam shofcho, which again is this theory of purity, and you purify the land through addressing the spilt blood, either through capital punishment or in this case, by taking the life of the calf. Obviously, this is a messy topic. And if you came here hoping that we'd get to the answer or the bottom, we didn't do that. And I think the Torah maybe believes that all three messages are true. Maybe the Torah believes that it's a little bit of everything. Maybe the Torah intentionally is touching on all of the different theoretical themes of capital punishment because the Torah wants to highlight that all three of these are true, and it's all of the above. Hopefully, I gave everybody something to think about during Torah reading this Shabbat. As you listen to Torah reading, you can keep your ears open and say, what theory is this verse sharing? Is this verse sharing the theory that it's punishment? Is this verse sharing the theory that it's pragmatics? Is this verse sharing the theory that it's deterrent? So it's 9:15, and the instructions I got was that at 9:15, I should open the floor for discussion and further conversation. So since it's 9:15, I will follow my marching orders and open it up for further discussion and perspectives.
There's the problem with one of the problems with capital punishment is that it's an irreversible error. And that's why I think it's Shaddal who says that one of the rationales of the Egla Arufa is to prevent an error being, it's Hirsch who says, it prevent killing an innocent victim because something is being done. Do you think that the Torah recognizes the possibility we know the Torah recognizes the possibility that the judges make a mistake. That's why we have the Korban of Asham. Do you think the Torah recognizes the possibility of mistaken sentence of capital punishment?
That's a really interesting question. Thank you, Gershon. I think, part of the reason why that Gemara and Makos that we've talked about says that the rabbis did not engage in, did not give out a lot of capital punishment was because they were worried about possible error. I think, Lauren, I agree 100%. Lauren says no one should face capital punishment on circumstantial evidence, which is true. In Judaism, we don't give capital punishment on circumstantial evidence. I'll note as an aside, when people ask Jews, are you for or against capital punishment in America? Jews should be against capital punishment in America, because in America, capital punishment is given for on the basis of circumstantial evidence. And the Torah only says that you have capital punishment in the case of one, for non-Jews in a non-Jewish court, or two, in the case of a Jewish court, eyewitnesses. To me, if the Torah repeats, and it repeats twice in this week's Parsha, two or three eyewitnesses, maybe that the Torah doesn't think that this could be subject to error, because how could two eyewitnesses get it wrong? But I think what Gershon is asking is, maybe they can. Maybe you can have eyewitnesses who don't remember correctly. But that is an important point, that in American and Canadian society today, capital punishment isn't with eyewitnesses. It's very rare to have a murder with actual eyewitnesses.
Now, we did not have jails. So what happens to a person who commits a crime if you don't have full proof that he's the murderer?
So the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf, I think this is Hey Aleph Amud Beis maybe. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that if you have a murderer and you have circumstantial evidence, you lock them up and you feed them a modified diet to cause them to die from intestinal failure. It's really complicated. On the one hand, the rabbis are saying, you need two witnesses, eyewitnesses. If there are no eyewitnesses, we're not going to punish you. But that doesn't work in a society because, as the Gemara says in another place, if two people go into a room and only one comes out and his hands are covered in blood, you can't just let that person go free because there are no eyewitnesses. So the Jewish court was willing to indirectly cause the person to die from intestinal failure, but it seems disingenuous because then you have capital punishment anyway. So I'm not sure exactly what to do with all of that. But if the court believed that they really, this person was really, guilty, then even if they didn't do capital punishment, they would indirectly cause the person to die. Arun Margolia says that he thinks as late as the 19th century, the Rabbinical Court of Jerusalem was killing people indirectly. Namely capital punishment, stoning, like you imagine in the Torah, where they take the person to a cliff and they stone them and the whole thing, or pouring hot lead down the throat, that we haven't done since the middle of the Second Temple period. But Ruma Magoya says this kind of, the court needs to do something. You can't allow a murderer in society that very, very late. We still dealt with that. Okay, Ellen is pointing out that in Malachim Aleph, Perek Kaf Aleph, the wicked king Ahav killed Navot, and that was a case in which false witnesses were hired and the capital punishment should not have been given. That's correct, although in that case, the court was the court of the wicked queen Isabel. So, I don't know. We can hope that in a regular Jewish court, capital punishment would only be given when appropriate. It's also not entirely.
Isn't there really a sort of a parallel, a set of courts? There's a court on Din Torah, a court, another court from Xeris HaMelech, that the, what the king is going to do. And in order to maintain society, those kind of courts, and this went all through up to the Middle Ages when the in Spain, when Jewish courts or the Jewish community, not necessarily their courts, had the right to use capital punishment. So they were doing that, and that was really not within a Dvar Torah, not a Midah Raisa, but it was something, a parallel need to maintain society through the Gzeiras HaMelech, through things, acts that the king would take to maintain a valid society.
Right. So one way to think about this is to think that maybe there's different types of capital punishment and there are different groups who do capital punishment. One of the things we'll read about in this week's Parsha is the king. And some suggest the Rambam himself, in the beginning of Hilchos Rotzeach, may even be saying this, that the court gives capital punishment for purity, religious, vengeance reasons. That's what the court does. The pragmatic needs to maintain peace and tranquility, that's what the king does. And you have two parallel tracks of capital punishment. If there's a danger to society, the king swoops in and says, it's not about the witnesses. It's not about, you know, let's wait until Sukkot to do it, because it's I have to keep the society safe. That's the role of the king. In contrast, the court says, we're a religious body, and as a religious body, God wants us, somebody typed this into the chat earlier, God wants us to be living a society in a way which we, you know, right wrongs in that society. And so the court has a different, the three theories that we started off with might relate to different people. And I'll add to that point, you know, Rav Kook's Yahrzeit it was yesterday, right? Yesterday was Rav Kook's Yahrzeit, I believe. And in one of the things that Rav Kook writes in his Hesped for Herzl, HaMisbeh B'Yerushalayim, is he talks about the fact that Judaism always had two parallel tracks, a track which is sort of realistic, how do we live within a society, and a parallel track which is idealistic, how do we live a religion of values? And that may be that capital punishment can be both, depending on which of the two groups are the ones giving out the capital punishment. Okay, no further questions?
Okay, very thought-provoking. Thank you.
I'm glad. Thank you all for coming. We have one last point here in the chat. Yes, David kills the Nar Amaleki, correct. In the beginning of Shmuel Beis, that's when David kills somebody without witnesses in order to 100%. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Have a great Shabbat. Hopefully, as you listen to the laning this Shabbos, you'll be able to think about a lot of these themes. And if anybody is very daring and wants to speak to the ritual committee about changing where you end the first Aliyah, you can feel free to give me as a reference. I'm happy to speak to any ritual committees about this topic as well.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much. Thank you, Yishkaya.
Laila Tova.
Thank you.
Early Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Jaffe. That was great. And thank you to everyone for coming. Tomorrow we have everything going on as usual with Pirkei Avot at 9:30 in the morning, and I'll put the link for that in the chat. We also have a lot of new programs coming up for Elul on Monday, on Sunday, Sefer Yonah on Sunday, and Monday we have Torah, Tshuva, Transgression, and Transformation in Tanakh, A Journey Through Tanakh, and Repentance. All of these programs are available on the website, and I can send a link to the program page in a minute. But thank you guys for coming, and I will see you guys hopefully at the next few shiurim.
Thank you, Orly, for managing the logistics. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Thank you for the shiur. It was wonderful.